"Visit my other portrait," said Phineas in a reedy voice, giving a long fake yawn, his eyes travelling around the room and focusing upon Harry. "Oh no, Dumbledore, I'm too tired tonight." Something about Phineas's voice was familiar to Harry. Where had he heard it before? But before he could think, the portraits on the surrounding walls broke into a storm of protest.
"Insubordination, sir!"
roared a corpulent red-nosed wizard, brandishing his fists.
"Dereliction of duty! We are honour-bound to give service to the present headmaster of Hogwarts,"
cried a frail-looking old wizard, whom Harry recognised as Dumbledore's predecessor, Armando Dippet.
"Shame on you, Phineas!"
"Shall I persuade him, Dumbledore?"
called a gimlet-eyed witch, raising an unusually thick wand that looked not unlike a birch rod.
"Oh, very well,"
said the wizard called Phineas, eyeing this wand slightly apprehensively.
"Though he may well have destroyed my picture by now. He's done most of the family."
"Sirius knows not to destroy your portrait,"
said Dumbledore, and Harry realized immediately where he had heard Phineas's voice before, issuing from the apparently empty frame in his bedroom in Grimald Place.
"You are to give him the message that Arthur Weasley has been gravely injured, and that his wife, children, and Harry Potter will be arriving at his house shortly. Do you understand?"
"Arthur Weasley injured, wife and children, and Harry Potter coming to stay,"
repeated Phineas in a bored voice.
"Yes, yes, very well."
He sloped away into the frame of the portrait and disappeared from view at the very moment that the study door opened again. Fred, George, and Ginny were ushered inside by Professor McGonagall, all three of them looking dishevelled and shocked, still in their night things.
"Harry, what's going on?"
asked Ginny, who looked frightened.
"Professor McGonagall says you saw Dad hurt."
"Your father has been injured in the course of his work for the Order of the Phoenix,"
said Dumbledore before Harry could speak.
"He has been taken to St. Mungo's Hospital for magical maladies and injuries. I am sending you back to Sirius's house, which is much more convenient for the hospital than the Burrow. You will meet your mother there."
"How are we going?"
asked Fred, looking shaken. "Flu powder?"
"No," said Dumbledore. "Flu powder is not safe at the moment. The network is being watched. You will be taking a portkey."
He indicated the old kettle lying innocently on his desk.
"We are just waiting for Phineas Nigellus to report back. I wish to be sure that the coast is clear before sending you..."
There was a flash of flame in the very middle of the office, leaving behind a single golden feather that floated gently to the floor.
"It is Fawkes's warning,"
said Dumbledore, catching the feather as it fell.
"She must know you're out of your beds. Minerva, go and head her off. Tell her any story."
Professor McGonagall was gone in a swish of tartan.
"He says he'll be delighted,"
said a bored voice behind Dumbledore. The wizard called Phineas had reappeared in front of his Slytherin banner.
"My great-great-grandson has always had odd taste in house guests."
"Come here, then,"
Dumbledore said to Harry and the Weasleys.
"And quickly, before anyone else joins us."
Harry and the others gathered around Dumbledore's desk.
"You have all used a portkey before?"
asked Dumbledore, and they nodded, each reaching out to touch some part of the blackened kettle.
"Good. On the count of three, then. 1, 2.
It happened in a fraction of a second. In the infinitesimal pause before Dumbledore said 3, Harry looked up at him. They were very close together, and Dumbledore's clear blue gaze moved from the portkey to Harry's face. At once, Harry's scar burned white hot, as though the old wound had burst open again, and, unbidden, unwanted, but terrifyingly strong, there rose within Harry a hatred so powerful he felt, for that instant, that he would like nothing better than to strike, to bite, to sink his fangs into the man before him.
3.
He felt a powerful jerk behind his navel, the ground vanish from beneath his feet, his hand was glued to the kettle. He was banging into the others as all sped forward in a swirl of colours and a rush of wind, the kettle pulling them onward, and then